In this podcast, we'll talk about Louis Kozer, who was born in 1913 and died in 2003. He was born in Berlin. In 1933, he emigrated to Paris, and in 1941, he emigrated to USA. His wife was also sociologist Rosa Laub. With her, he very often collaborated. He finished his PhD at Columbia University. His advisor was Robert Merton. He finished his PhD at the age of 41. The maybe most famous book is The Functions of Social Conflict, which was written in 1956. This is quite a slim book. There are many ideas from Simmel that he builds upon, and I think it's a nice book to read, so I could possibly recommend it for you to read, so you can, because it's quite difficult to get some structure of conflict from the Simmel essay about conflict, and I think the theory of Kozer is has much better and clearer structure. So if you read this book, you just get a nice view on both ideas by Simmel and also by Kozer. So we'll talk about his book, The Functions of Social Conflict, and we'll talk about it a little bit deeper because it's a part of state exam. So let's go on. At the beginning of his book, he states some preliminary definition, which is a point of departure, a definition of conflict. He says it is a struggle over values and claims to scarce status, power and resources, in which the aims of the opponents are to neutralize, injure or eliminate their rivals. He focuses more on functions than on dysfunctions of conflict. For him, the previous theory of conflict is some kind of unfulfilled program of sociology. He mentioned that a lot of sociologists in the beginning of era of American sociology worked or in their program had some kind of goal of building theory of conflict. However, he says that most of them just finished where Simmel ended. The first generation of American sociologists was consisted of reformers, so the theory of conflict was quite a prominent topic. However, later the area of interest a little bit shifted to more bureaucratical interests or interests of some private companies. Rather than on sociological classics, he builds his book on Simmel's essay Der Streit. He has some reasons for this. First, he says that it's kind of pragmatic because following one author is much easier. Second, he believes that the Simmel's contribution to sociology of conflict is the most fruitful yet. The book consists of 16 chapters or propositions that are taken from Simmel, and he reacts to them. We will put some of these propositions together, so if you count properly, I will mention less of them. So let's start with the propositions. First, the conflict with other groups leads to setting and preserving identity of and boundaries of a group. This holds also for the subgroups, for example, in some kind of stratification. He says that the relation between the stratas are always a mixture of hostility and attraction. He talks in this context about the castes in India, where there is also some kind of hostility and attraction between these castes. However, these do not lead into conflict because the strata are legitimized. And that's the point that Simmel does not take into account, that hostility does not mean the conflict. The huge influence has the legitimization of status or various statuses. Second statement is that conflict is not always dysfunctional. Without the possibility of ventilating or of mutual conflict, the group can feel destroyed and can retract to anomie. So the conflict or manifestation of conflict actually leads to some kind of preservation of the relationship. A lot of social systems have various institutions for draining aggressive and unfriendly energies. One mechanism, well-known mechanism, is called safety valve, and it drains the tension from the original object to some surrogatory object. We know the mechanism of scapegoating, or there can be other option that it can drain the tensions to some tension release activity. However, this safety valve mechanism can lead to accumulating of tension, and if there is some suitable occasion, it can erupt. Kuser distinguishes between the mechanisms that do not lead to conflict and the mechanisms that do lead into some, let's say, violent catharsis on a surrogatory object. The first category, in the first category, he mentions, for example, witchcraft, where we go to witch or shaman, and he, for example, curses our enemies, so there is no need to be violent or to get in touch with these enemies. In the group about the catharsis of on some surrogatory object or some kind of object, he mentions duel. So if we participate in duel, so if we kill the other person, then we have our revenge and the tension is released. If we are both injured and for example both survive, then we are prohibited to continue the violence. He states some kind of hypothesis that this safety valve mechanisms are necessary mostly in rigid systems. We'll mention or define the rigid systems a little bit later. In his third proposition, he distinguishes between realistic and unrealistic conflict. He says that this is some kind of conceptual abstraction from reality, so these are actually ideal types, and in reality we find both, like a mixture of these types. First, the realistic conflict. He says that it is a conflict that comes from some kind of frustrations or demands that actually are related to some kind of originator of frustrations. The conflict is understood as a means to some kind of goal or to relieving the frustration. However, unrealistic conflict is mostly driven by some kind of need of releasing tension of one or both sides. He says also that the difference is that in realistic conflict there exist functional alternatives in means of reaching the goal, and in unrealistic conflict there exist functional alternatives in objects, so we can only choose some surrogatory object. He also says that the unrealistic conflict is less stable. Another proposition of his states that aggressive or hostile policies are not enough to establish conflict. He says that the conflict can be established only in interaction between subject and object. So there is, we need to presume some kind of relationship. Another proposition says that the conflict is the more radical, the closer are the relations. Well, it's kind of logical or intuitive. If we have closer relations, then it leads to a higher emotional investment and also to higher tendency of suppressing the negative feelings. Those can of course accumulate, and of course we when we have some kind of conflict in closer relations, these are usually connected to some basic values of our relationship. The closer the original relation of units, the more radical and the more violent is the reaction in upcoming conflict. Especially intensively is perceived the threat of disrupting the unity of a group. There are two special individuals that can disrupt the unity. The first is the renegade, and the second one is the heretic. Meanwhile, the renegade leaves the group and actually shows that it is possible to leave the group. The heretic continues in accumulating other members or collecting the members of the original group. So that is why he's even more dangerous. However, Kozer does not say that the conflicts in these closer groups are more probable. That is important to say. He also says that the long-lasting conflicts with some kind of outer group tend to make the inner intolerance even higher. Another proposition says that not all conflicts are functional. He explains it that only those conflicts are functional that do not reach the basis on which the relations are based. He says that loosely grouped societies can enable conflicts, and in this way they prevent emergence of conflict that touches the core of the common values. A lot of minor conflict actually can cancel each out, and they basically sue the society together. As an example, he speaks about class conflict in modern society. That is not disruptive when the other conflicts do not accent this kind of cleavage or disruption between classes. So the conflicts go not alongside this cleavage. So the frequent opportunity to conflict do not usually mean frequent conflicts. He also says that tighter relations usually lead to suppression of conflict by some mechanisms like safety valve. And if the conflict emerges, there is a tendency of it to break the ties of society. Another proposition says that the absence of conflict is not a great measure or index of stability of society. He says that the stability is characterized not by absence of conflict, but the conflict behavior. Conflict with other group leads to mobilization, to inner energies, and to heightened cohesion. However, this does not mean the centralization. The centralization will be more probable in context of war conflicts. However, such conflicts can lead also to anomie or apathy. Zimmel speaks about despotism as kind of ideal way of reaching centrality. Kozer speaks about despotism in relation to lack of cohesion. It's like the last possibility to overcome disintegration in order to face some outer conflict. He also says that a conflict does not have to be real to have real impact. This is kind of similar to self-fulfilling prophecy. For example, if you provoke the enemy, or this provocation can lead to very hard response. Or he says that a rigid group actually searches for some kind of virtual conflict in order to overcome the threats of disrupting inner cohesions. There are many ways how to reach that. For example, they can evoke the enemy, they can make him up, they can make him bigger than he actually is, or they can use the mechanism of scapegoating. He also uses Zimmel's thesis that the participants, when the participants are or think of themselves as representatives of a group or some higher ideal or ideology, there is a tendency of conflicts to become more radical and violent. To this, Kozer adds that if both sides are having the same goal, then the objectification of a conflict can be actually unifying. Another statement is that the conflict can waken up new types of interactions between antagonists. That is a nice function of conflict. We need to say that conflict is usually based on some kind of background having common norms. For example, a conflict about property of land assumes that both parties accept the idea of right of property. So now the conflict can actually stimulate a lot of things. First, it can stimulate modification and emergence of law. Second, it can stimulate the growth of institutions and structures that are focused on keeping these rules or law. And third, it can like wake some dormant norms. Another proposition is that we do not always want the enemy to be united. Zimmel talks that this is sometimes favorable if we walk with the enemy and he uses some kind of guerrilla or partisan war. It's very uncomfortable. Or we know the example about labor unions. So it's better to deal with them and not with some raging violent workers. However, he says that Kozer says that this is not always the case. The want of unification of the enemy is usual in case of some kind of balance of strength of the antagonists. Another proposition of Kozer says that the conflict is actually a test of power of antagonists. It's usually very difficult to measure the power of antagonists and the conflict or the beginning of conflict is the only way. He says that when the conflict manifests itself, then it actually shows the powers of all the sides, and this can lead to some balancing results. So it can be actually good. However, he says that the conflict is not the same thing as contest, because the contest has beforehand given rules. Another proposition says that conflict brings together even unrelated persons or groups. Usually some kind of pragmatical interests form some temporary alliances or collaborations. However, it only rarely builds some permanent groupings. Such kind of alliances are possible in more flexible groups. This alliance is perceived by other groups as hostile, so this leads to creating new alliances, and this way it encourages social participation, building of social structure. Well, to conclude the ideas by Kozer, we could say that the conflict is dysfunctional for a society with insufficient tolerance and institutionalization of conflict. So now here the main threat of equilibrium is not the conflict itself, but the rigidity of society.